The listening sub-test consists of 4 parts and a total of 30 questions. In each part, you will hear recordings twice. In each part, there will be time for you to look at the questions before you hear the recordings. You can write your answers on the test booklet. At the end of the test, you will need to copy your answers to the answer sheet. Now, turn to part 1. You will hear 10 utterances. Match the utterances of each speaker, 1 to 10, with the statements below, A to L. Use each letter once only. There are 2 statements which you don't need to use. Now, you have 30 seconds to look at the questions. Now, we are ready to start. Listen carefully. You will hear each recording twice.
1. TV is viewed by millions of people daily. The information that people get from TV allows them to stay informed about the world and to draw conclusions about what is happening in the world. Television news is not colored by political parties like newspapers are, and if you don't like what you're watching, you can change it to another channel. That way, whatever people like the most, they are free to choose, and they don't even have to pay for it.
2. Now listen again.
TV is viewed by millions of people daily. The information that people get from TV allows them to stay informed about the world and to draw conclusions about what is happening in the world. Television news is not colored by political parties like newspapers are, and if you don't like what you're watching, you can change it to another channel. That way, whatever people like the most, they are free to choose, and they don't even have to pay for it.
2.
In a world divided by classes, upper class, middle class, lower class, working class, underclass, the TV is wonderfully classless. It has to appeal to millions of people, so it cannot be just for upper class or just for working class people. Moreover, TV is free. The advertisers pay for it, so no matter how rich or poor you are, you still have the same access to the same information and entertainment. The queen and the street cleaner can watch and laugh at the same program.
3. Now listen again.
In a world divided by classes, upper class, middle class, lower class, working class, underclass, the TV is wonderfully classless. It has to appeal to millions of people, so it cannot be just for upper class or just for working class people. Moreover, TV is free. The advertisers pay for it, so no matter how rich or poor you are, you still have the same access to the same information and entertainment. The queen and the street cleaner can watch and laugh at the same program.
3.
TV asks nothing of you, but is always there for you. If you don't like what it's saying, you don't have to get in an argument. You just need to change the channel. It will give you advice if you choose to let it. It will keep you entertained if you are bored. It can get you up to date in world news in just 15 minutes, while it can help you relax for 2 hours during a favorite old film. And when it's time to sleep and you just can't unwind, it goes all black and white and makes a relaxing hissing sound, so you can just doze off.
Now listen again.
TV asks nothing of you, but is always there for you. If you don't like what it's saying, you don't have to get in an argument. You just need to change the channel. It will give you advice if you choose to let it. It will keep you entertained if you are bored. It can get you up to date in world news in just 15 minutes, while it can help you relax for 2 hours during a favorite old film. And when it's time to sleep and you just can't unwind, it goes all black and white and makes a relaxing hissing sound, so you can just doze off.
4.
Your brain hurts, your eyes are tired, and you're struggling with all the new thoughts which keep jumping into your head. Well, if that's the case, I'm sorry to tell you that you're a TV kid born and raised on a diet of intellectual junk food, fed to you from your earliest years through the TV. Sorry, but there is a way out of it. If you can read, there might just be hope for you. It will be hard. You will have to think, you know. Actually use your brain, and you will have to fight against all you've been brought up to accept as true. But there is hope. Just read.
Now listen again.
Your brain hurts, your eyes are tired, and you're struggling with all the new thoughts which keep jumping into your head. Well, if that's the case, I'm sorry to tell you that you're a TV kid born and raised on a diet of intellectual junk food, fed to you from your earliest years through the TV. Sorry, but there is a way out of it. If you can read, there might just be hope for you. It will be hard. You will have to think, you know. Actually use your brain, and you will have to fight against all you've been brought up to accept as true. But there is hope. Just read.
5.
Have you also noticed how less and less people have hobbies like they used to? When was the last time when you went home in the evening and set about doing something constructive? Making something, building something, learning something. Okay, maybe once or twice in the last year, but admit it, most of the time you'll get home, grab some food which takes 5 seconds to prepare, and hit the remote control to turn the telly on before you've even said hello to the other members of your household.
Now listen again.
Have you also noticed how less and less people have hobbies like they used to? When was the last time when you went home in the evening and set about doing something constructive? Making something, building something, learning something. Okay, maybe once or twice in the last year, but admit it, most of the time you'll get home, grab some food which takes 5 seconds to prepare, and hit the remote control to turn the telly on before you've even said hello to the other members of your household.
6.
I'm fond of movies and I often go to the cinema. I like films which include high energy, chases, possibly with rescues, battles, fights, escapes. When you watch them, you can't tear yourself away from the screen because of non-stop motion and spectacular rhythm and pacing. My favorite films include the James Bond fantasy spy espionage series with a really adventurous plot and superheroes.
Now listen again.
I'm fond of movies and I often go to the cinema. I like films which include high energy, chases, possibly with rescues, battles, fights, escapes. When you watch them, you can't tear yourself away from the screen because of non-stop motion and spectacular rhythm and pacing. My favorite films include the James Bond fantasy spy espionage series with a really adventurous plot and superheroes.
7.
As for my favorite genre, I enjoy comedies. As a rule, they always have light-hearted plots. Their aims are to amuse and provoke laughter. I like the moments with exaggerating the situation when you begin to be surprised if it can happen in real life. Moreover, I'd like to stress that I enjoy British comedies. British humor includes all ages, and the jokes and characters are intellectual, and sometimes they make you think about serious things.
Now listen again.
As for my favorite genre, I enjoy comedies. As a rule, they always have light-hearted plots. Their aims are to amuse and provoke laughter. I like the moments with exaggerating the situation when you begin to be surprised if it can happen in real life. Moreover, I'd like to stress that I enjoy British comedies. British humor includes all ages, and the jokes and characters are intellectual, and sometimes they make you think about serious things.
8.
I rarely watch films as I am very busy with my school, but if I go to the cinema, I prefer dramas. They're serious, plot-driven presentations. As a rule, they portray realistic characters and life situations. Moreover, dramas involve intense character development and interaction. Of course, I feel these films keenly, and they teach me a right attitude to life.
Now listen again.
I rarely watch films as I am very busy with my school, but if I go to the cinema, I prefer dramas. They're serious, plot-driven presentations. As a rule, they portray realistic characters and life situations. Moreover, dramas involve intense character development and interaction. Of course, I feel these films keenly, and they teach me a right attitude to life.
9.
It may seem strange, but I am fond of horror films. Horror films are designed to frighten and to invoke our hidden worst fears, often in a terrifying, shocking final. They generally have better stories and plot-driven action. They can also offer a feeling of exhilaration, and they are often tied together with the mystery genre, which can promote discussion of the movie, which can improve our critical thinking. So my choice is horror films.
9.
It may seem strange, but I am fond of horror films. Horror films are designed to frighten and to invoke our hidden worst fears, often in a terrifying, shocking final. They generally have better stories and plot-driven action. They can also offer a feeling of exhilaration, and they are often tied together with the mystery genre, which can promote discussion of the movie, which can improve our critical thinking. So my choice is horror films.
10.
I think that we teenagers like lots of sci-fi things because they can open up our imaginations to possibilities that are endless. A lot of sci-fi things out there have a lot of adventure in them. These films are full of distant planets, impossible guests, improbable settings, and fantastic places. But the best things related to this genre is extraordinary monsters, things or creatures from space, either created by mad scientists or by nuclear devastation.
9.
I think that we teenagers like lots of sci-fi things because they can open up our imaginations to possibilities that are endless. A lot of sci-fi things out there have a lot of adventure in them. These films are full of distant planets, impossible guests, improbable settings, and fantastic places. But the best things related to this genre is extraordinary monsters, things or creatures from space, either created by mad scientists or by nuclear devastation.
This is the end of part 1. Now, turn to part 2. You will hear a dialogue. For questions 11 to 16, decide if the following statements agree with information from the conversation. If the statement is true, mark A. If the statement is false, mark B. Now, you have 30 seconds to look at the questions. Now we are ready to start. Listen carefully. You will hear the recording twice.
Hi. You're Daniel, right?
No, Diana. Remember, we met at Gary's party last Friday night. I'm David.
Oh, yeah. Now I remember. You were standing all alone. You know. We started talking about school, about our brothers and our childhood. How did you know I lived here?
Well, I just live around the corner, and I asked Gary if he knew how I could contact you, and...
And?
Well, I was just wondering if you'd like to go out this Thursday night. Well, there's this really great movie playing downtown at the theatre, and I thought, well, we can't use my car because I was in an accident with this wild man driving his BMW. So I've already checked the bus schedule, and,
Well, David... I'm sorry, but I have to work that evening.
Oh, really? Well, I thought you said before that you quit your job.
Well, I did, but I found a new one.
Ah. Well, how about this Friday night? We could have dinner and then see that movie.
A movie? How boring.
A movie? Yeah, forget a movie.
Anyway, I'm afraid I have to cook dinner for my family and...
Hey, I love cooking. We could whip something up together. I mean, it would be great.
I don't think that's a good idea. It's just a family occasion and...
Well, hey, are you free this Saturday night? I have 2 tickets to the football game, and I thought...
Sure, I'd love to go. I've wanted to see a game all year. My brother will be so surprised when he finds out I have a ticket for him too, and...
But the ticket...
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay. Hey, it's been really nice talking to you, but I have to run. Hey, here are the tickets, and have a great time.
Now listen again.
Hi. You're Daniel, right?
No, Diana. Remember, we met at Gary's party last Friday night. I'm David.
Oh, yeah. Now I remember. You were standing all alone. You know. We started talking about school, about our brothers and our childhood. How did you know I lived here?
Well, I just live around the corner, and I asked Gary if he knew how I could contact you, and...
And?
Well, I was just wondering if you'd like to go out this Thursday night. Well, there's this really great movie playing downtown at the theatre, and I thought, we can't use my car because I was in an accident with this wild man driving his BMW. So I've already checked the bus schedule, and,
David, I'm sorry, but I have to work that evening.
Oh, really? Well, I thought you said before that you quit your job.
Well, I did, but I found a new one.
Ah. Well, how about this Friday night? We could have dinner and then see that movie.
A movie? How boring.
A movie? Yeah, forget a movie.
Anyway, I'm afraid I have to cook dinner for my family and...
Hey, I love cooking. We could whip something up together. I mean, it would be great.
I don't think that's a good idea. It's just a family occasion and...
Well, hey, are you free this Saturday night? I have 2 tickets to the football game, and I thought...
Sure, I'd love to go. I've wanted to see a game all year. My brother will be so surprised when he finds out I have a ticket for him too, and...
But the ticket...
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay. Hey, it's been really nice talking to you, but I have to run. Hey, here are the tickets, and have a great time.
This is the end of part 2. Now, turn to part 3. You will hear an interview. For questions 17 to 22, choose the best answer, A, B, or C. Now, you have 30 seconds to look at the questions. Now we are ready to start. Listen carefully.
Welcome everyone again to the Different Lives program. Here in the studio today we have Ray Bell, who is, I guess we can call you a professional competition winner.
That's about right, but I don't win every competition I take part in, unfortunately. It would be nice if I did.
Ray, can you tell us exactly what you do?
I make a living from competitions, all sorts of them. You name them, I do it. Word games, questionnaires, quizzes, collecting tokens, riddles, treasure hunts, making up slogans. The list is endless, really, but there are loads out there, and I do about 50 a week. Some are very quick to do, maybe just answering a simple couple of questions by text message. Others can take several weeks, especially those involving collecting a certain number of samples of a product like bottle tops. The prizes vary too, but I win enough to justify the time put in.
How did you get into this world of competitions?
Well, I'd done a few competitions when I was younger and quite liked them, but there's nothing unusual in that. I mean, everyone has done some sort of contest, haven't they? What turned things round was when I won my first serious prize, a home computer. It was a very basic model, but quite expensive at that time, probably more than a month's wages in my boring office job. I was thrilled to bits with that computer, and all I had done was just send off a questionnaire and get my name pulled out of a hat. It made me think that I could get other stuff, too, if I did more of the same. So it all started. I got more skilled and successful, and eventually I was able to give up my regular work and concentrate on it full-time.
Tell us more about the prizes you've won, Ray.
Most of them are quite small, really, like a cuddly toy or a discount on something. Competitions are basically marketing ploys, and companies tend to just give you free products, some of which you might not even really want. I remember winning 12 packs of nappies when my young son had just become toilet trained. The big wins stand out, of course. 2 years ago, I won a car, which I really needed at the time, but my best prize was a safari in Kenya. It was the holiday of a lifetime, and I'm still looking at the photos.
There must be a lot of people doing the same thing, though.
You're right there. It's getting harder to win competitions, but not because of other people. It's the technology, especially the Internet. Now quizzes and the like are easy to answer because you can look up the information in a matter of seconds. Everyone who enters a competition like that will have the right answer, so it comes down to luck or an extra task like making up an advertising slogan, saying why you like the product in less than 20 words, that kind of thing. It's very hard to do those kinds of tasks because you don't really know what the judges are looking for.
Back to prizes. You must have won a few things you regret getting.
Sure, I mentioned the nappies, but what sticks out is a year's supply of chocolate cookies. I had to make up a poem about them, and I thought my effort was silly, so I was surprised to win. Anyway, the cookies arrived, and for 3 months, the whole family ate them until they were coming out of our ears. Then one day, I bit into one and lost a tooth. One cookie too many. The dentist laughed her head off when I told her how it happened, but she advised me to stay off the cookies for a while, which I did. I haven't eaten one since.
Now listen again.
Welcome, everyone, again to the Different Lives program. Here in the studio today, we have Ray Bell, who is, I guess we can call you a professional competition winner.
That's about right, but I don't win every competition I take part in, unfortunately. It would be nice if I did.
Ray, can you tell us exactly what you do?
I make a living from competitions, all sorts of them. You name them, I do it. Word games, questionnaires, quizzes, collecting tokens, riddles, treasure hunts, making up slogans. The list is endless, really, but there are loads out there, and I do about 50 a week. Some are very quick to do, maybe just answering a simple couple of questions by text message. Others can take several weeks, especially those involving collecting a certain number of samples of a product like bottle tops. The prizes vary, too, but I win enough to justify the time put in.
How did you get into this world of competitions?
Well, I'd done a few competitions when I was younger and quite liked them, but there's nothing unusual in that. I mean, everyone has done some sort of contest, haven't they? What turned things round was when I won my first serious prize, a home computer. It was a very basic model, but quite expensive at that time, probably more than a month's wages in my boring office job. I was thrilled to bits with that computer, and all I had done was just send off a questionnaire and get my name pulled out of a hat. It made me think that I could get other stuff, too, if I did more of the same. So it all started. I got more skilled and successful, and eventually I was able to give up my regular work and concentrate on it full-time.
Tell us more about the prizes you've won, Ray.
Most of them are quite small, really, like a cuddly toy or a discount on something. Competitions are basically marketing ploys, and companies tend to just give you free products, some of which you might not even really want. I remember winning 12 packs of nappies when my young son had just become toilet trained. The big wins stand out, of course. 2 years ago, I won a car, which I really needed at the time, but my best prize was a safari in Kenya. It was the holiday of a lifetime, and I'm still looking at the photos.
There must be a lot of people doing the same thing, though.
You're right there. It's getting harder to win competitions, but not because of other people. It's the technology, especially the internet. Now quizzes and the like are easy to answer because you can look up the information in a matter of seconds. Everyone who enters a competition like that will have the right answer, so it comes down to luck or an extra task like making up an advertising slogan, saying why you like the product in less than 20 words, that kind of thing. It's very hard to do those kinds of tasks because you don't really know what the judges are looking for.
Back to prizes. You must have won a few things you regret getting.
Sure, I mentioned the nappies, but what sticks out is a year's supply of chocolate cookies. I had to make up a poem about them, and I thought my effort was silly, so I was surprised to win. Anyway, the cookies arrived, and for 3 months the whole family ate them until they were coming out of our ears. Then one day I bit into one and lost a tooth. One cookie too many. The dentist laughed her head off when I told her how it happened, but she advised me to stay off the cookies for a while, which I did. I haven't eaten one since.
This is the end of part 3. Now, turn to part 4. You will hear part of a lecture. For questions 23 to 30, choose the best answer, A, B, or C. Now, you have 30 seconds to look at the questions. Now we are ready to start. Listen carefully. You will hear the recording twice.
So I wanted to discuss a few other terms here. Actually, some ideas about how we manage our resources. Let's talk about what that means. If we take a resource like water, well, maybe we should get a little bit more specific here, back up from the more general case, and talk about underground water in particular. So, hydrogeologists have tried to figure out how much water can you take out from underground sources? This has been an important question. Let me ask you guys, how much water, based on what you know so far, could you take out of, say, an aquifer under the city?
As much as would get recharged?
Okay. So, we wouldn't want to take out any more than naturally comes into it. The implication is that, if you only take as much out as comes in, you're not going to deplete the amount of water that's stored in there, right? Wrong. But that's the principle. That's the idea behind how we manage our water supplies. It's called safe yield. Basically, what this method says is that you can pump as much water out of a system as naturally recharges, as naturally flows back in. So this principle of safe yield, it's based on balancing what we take out with what gets recharged, but what it does is it ignores how much water naturally comes out of the system. In a natural system, a certain amount of recharge comes in, and a certain amount of water naturally flows out through springs, streams, and lakes. And over the long term, the amount that's stored in the aquifer doesn't really change much. It's balanced. Now humans come in and start taking water out of the system. How have we changed the equation?
It's not balanced anymore?
Right. We take water out, but water also naturally flows out. And the recharge rate doesn't change. So the result is we've reduced the amount of water that's stored in the underground system. If you keep doing that long enough, if you pump as much water out as naturally comes in, gradually the underground water levels drop. And when that happens, that can affect surface water. How? Well, in underground systems there are natural discharge points, places where the water flows out of the underground systems, out to lakes and streams. Well, a drop in the water level can mean those discharge points will eventually dry up. That means water's not getting to lakes and streams that depend on it. So we've ended up reducing the surface water supply, too. You know, in the state of Arizona, we're managing some major water supplies with this principle of safe yield, under a method that will eventually dry up the natural discharge points of those aquifer systems. Now, why is this an issue? Well, aren't some of you going to want to live in this state for a while? Want your kids to grow up here and your kids' kids? You might be concerned with, does Arizona have a water supply which is sustainable? Key word here. Now, what that means, the general definition of sustainable is, will there be enough to meet the needs of the present without compromising the ability of the future to have the availability to have the same resources? Now, I hope you see that these two ideas are incompatible, sustainability and safe yield, because what sustainability means is that it's sustainable for all systems dependent on the water, for the people that use it, and for supplying water to the dependent lakes and streams. So I'm going to repeat this. So if we're using a safe yield method, if we're only balancing what we take out with what gets recharged, but don't forget, water's also flowing out naturally, then the amount stored underground is going to gradually get reduced, and that's going to lead to another problem. These discharge points, where the water flows out to the lakes and streams, they're going to dry up. Okay.
Now listen again.
So, I wanted to discuss a few other terms here. Actually, some ideas about how we manage our resources. Let's talk about what that means. If we take a resource like water, well, maybe we should get a little bit more specific here, back up from the more general case, and talk about underground water in particular. So, hydrogeologists have tried to figure out how much water can you take out from underground sources. This has been an important question. Let me ask you guys, how much water, based on what you know so far, could you take out of, say, an aquifer under the city?
As much as would get recharged.
Okay. So, we wouldn't want to take out any more than naturally comes into it. The implication is that, if you only take as much out as comes in, you're not going to deplete the amount of water that's stored in there, right? Wrong. But that's the principle. That's the idea behind how we manage our water supplies. It's called safe yield. Basically, what this method says is that you can pump as much water out of the system as naturally recharges, as naturally flows back in. So this principle of safe yield, it's based on balancing what we take out with what gets recharged. But what it does is it ignores how much water naturally comes out of the system. In a natural system, a certain amount of recharge comes in, and a certain amount of water naturally flows out through springs, streams, and lakes. And over the long term, the amount that's stored in the aquifer doesn't really change much. It's balanced. Now humans come in and start taking water out of the system. How have we changed the equation?
It's not balanced anymore?
Right. We take water out, but water also naturally flows out. And the recharge rate doesn't change. So the result is we've reduced the amount of water that's stored in the underground system. If you keep doing that long enough, if you pump as much water out as naturally comes in, gradually the underground water levels drop. And when that happens, that can affect surface water. How? Well, in underground systems, there are natural discharge points, places where the water flows out of the underground systems, out to lakes and streams. Well, a drop in the water level can mean those discharge points will eventually dry up. That means water's not getting to lakes and streams that depend on it. So we've ended up reducing the surface water supply, too. You know, in the state of Arizona, we're managing some major water supplies with this principle of safe yield, under a method that will eventually dry up the natural discharge points of those aquifer systems. Now, why is this an issue? Well, aren't some of you going to want to live in this state for a while? Want your kids to grow up here and your kids' kids? You might be concerned with, does Arizona have a water supply which is sustainable? Key word here. Now, what that means, the general definition of sustainable is, will there be enough to meet the needs of the present without compromising the ability of the future to have the availability to have the same resources? Now, I hope you see that these two ideas are incompatible, sustainability and safe yield. Because what sustainability means is that it's sustainable for all systems dependent on the water, for the people that use it, and for supplying water to the dependent lakes and streams. So I'm going to repeat this. So if we're using a safe yield method, if we're only balancing what we take out with what gets recharged, but don't forget, water is also flowing out naturally, then the amount stored underground is going to gradually get reduced, and that's going to lead to another problem. These discharge points, where the water flows out to the lakes and streams, they're going to dry up. Okay.
This is the end of the listening sub test.